Hello, everyone. Glad you could join us today. I'm John Noonan from Windows Azure Marketing, and I'm excited to have two great guest speakers for our discussion on cloud security. We have Andres Serre, VP and Principal Analyst at Forrester Research, and our very own Dave Campbell, CTO of Microsoft's Cloud and Enterprise Group. In terms of format today, Andres will start off presenting, and then Dave will share his perspective and expertise on cloud security, and we'll finish up with 15 to 20 minutes of Q&A. So if you have any questions along the way, please submit them, and we'll do our best to answer as many as we can towards the end of the session. So with that, I'll hand it over to Andres.
Hi, everyone. This is Andres Chair from Forrester Research. So I've been looking at cloud security for quite a while now, and this is without doubt one of the most interesting coverage areas that I've ever been involved with. So why is cloud security so unique and so interesting and so important? Well, it is unique because it's a special field, right? So cloud security is special because it's much like a two-component glue. It's a unique blend of two components, two things that really create a third compound, a third mixture, which is really different from what you would come to expect if you just looked at these two things separately. So the cloud is really not just a new delivery platform. That's component A here, right? So the red tube, right? It's not just a new delivery platform. It's much, much more than that. So the cloud, it really presents a new economic model, a new way to negotiate, a new way of acquire really any kind of software services or any kind of IT services out there. So it's really not just another way of delivering software to users and services to users. It's basically a hosting platform. It is a new middleware. It has implications in almost every aspect of the IT industry. And B, so component B, is really cloud security is not about just continuing on-premise security and hoping and crossing fingers that by using the same mechanisms, same methods that we used to use for on-premise security will work in the cloud. And actually, that is one of the questions that we asked here in this survey that we helped Microsoft with. So basically this whole webinar today, at least my part in it, is about giving our audience today on this webinar an overview of a thought leadership paper that Forrester, in collaboration with Microsoft, created for Microsoft. And what basically this paper is all about is basically setting up premises, questions, and hypotheses, running an independent survey, getting results, analyzing the results, and coming to conclusions based off of data. So that's just the frame around this. So before we get started into the slicing and dicing all the results from the survey, which will be very interesting and very informative, I wanted to spend just a bit of time explaining some aspects of cloud security, for which we may not necessarily have quantitative answers, but nevertheless are exciting from the qualitative perspective. So, as I said, the cloud and security is not just an extension of what we've been doing and extending on-premise security to the cloud. It's much more than that. So from the people perspective or the organizational perspective, the cloud also presents some really unique challenges. So if you look at the CISO's role, the Chief Information Security Officer's role, and the security organization's role, in this whole cloud security arena, they are the kid in front of the sumo wrestler. So it's basically a fairly uneven handshake. And why is this handshake uneven, right? So let's walk through this diagram. Everyone understands that, number one, the cloud offers irresistible benefits, and we are going to talk about these benefits, but this is typically scalability of the solution, licensing flexibility, less money spent on on-prem resources to maintain a solution, no spend on initial software licenses, et cetera. So there is irresistible benefits of the cloud, and everybody knows that the cloud is real now, and they should be moving towards it. However, in a lot of cases, basically the line of business folks are faster than the IT or IT security organization, and they say, look, if the IT cannot give us the tools that we need, we're just going to go out, take out that credit card, and then go to any cloud provider, and we'll just procure those cloud services. So that's number two. The line of business folks will basically go ahead and do that on their own. The CISO, in the meantime, number three, cannot say no all the time. So instead of basically saying, hey, you can't do that, you can't get Box, you can't put all this into the cloud, you can't, you know, put all these confidential information in the cloud, saying no and being the department of NO is increasingly an untenable, an unsustainable posture for a CISO. So CISOs that continue to say no, you know, have become extinct or will become extinct pretty quickly. So they have to transfer the IT security from the department of no, N-O, to the department of no, K-N-O-W. So they can't say no all the time. Number four, it's a reality that the data center is loosely coupled, right? So we got services that are moving to the cloud, but there are also some services that remain on-premise that will never move to the cloud. So it's a hybrid world. You cannot move everything to the cloud, but there will be services, software. There will be basically various kinds of IT components that will be moving to the cloud. And obviously, number five, security continues to struggle to reduce the cloud security risks. And we're going to hear a lot about this today. It's really what all the meat of today's presentation is about. But what really this boils down to is that the CISO is in the corner, right? It's an uneven handshake, both towards internal business stakeholders to whom you have to enable that they can use cloud-based services securely, and also towards the cloud provider, right? So if you have to make sure that your cloud services are robust, and you have to be sure that you can pass on as a CISO your requirements to your cloud provider in terms of security. So that's the organizational aspect, the uneven handshake of cloud security. The way we set up the taxonomy of this field, so the cloud security taxonomy, is really three types of services. So this is after we kind of looked around and found out that cloud security means basically 20 different things to 10 different people. Really, we try to create some taxonomy. So on the left-hand side, you have the on-premise components and the infrastructure, and on the right, you have the cloud. So we differentiate between three types of cloud security flavors, and we tend to call them cloud security prepositions. So there's the security to the cloud, which is how you use your on-prem security things to protect your cloud offerings, which is really not something that's so exciting. I mean, there's not a lot of new developments here, but this is clearly something that CISOs need to keep in mind as the lower end of the maturity curve. The second thing is security in the cloud, or at your SaaS, PaaS, and infrastructure as a service provider. So that really is the question. How can your SaaS vendor, platform as a service vendor, or infrastructure as a service vendor prove to you that what they're doing is actually secure, they're able to secure their own infrastructure, their own foundation, and it's really along the lines of best practices and compliance. And thirdly, which is also a very fast evolving area, is the security from the cloud. In other words, how can you use cloud-based services to further fortify and increase the security for your SaaS vendors, for your platform as a service vendors and infrastructure as a service vendors, as well as improve your on-premise security. Today's talk and this whole thought leadership paper is mainly about looking at number two and to some degree number three, so security in the cloud and to some degree security from the cloud. So what are some of the things that, you know, we find that further distinguish cloud security? What are some of the problems here? the ease of use for end users, i.e., you cannot control the user population, you cannot change behaviors, how users work. So cloud security should be completely transparent. It should not require users to change their behaviors, adapt to new mechanisms, do anything extra. Inconsistent control. So as an organization, as an IT end user organization, you don't own and don't control everything. The only thing that most companies think and believe that they can count on is if they're using infrastructure as a service types of offerings is the ownership of the guest virtual machine. Whatever is running on top of the hypervisor, they can have control over that. The other problem that we've seen is elasticity. In other words, not all servers are steady state, right? So things are changing in this environment. There is a lot of cloud bursting. You have stale servers that are not doing anything. A lot of times you have dynamic provisioning to adapt to the workload or the requirements towards your environment. So this is obviously one of the very reasons why people want to use cloud services, so they have an elastic offering and environment. And lastly, scalability. You have a lot of servers. So in some cases, we've heard customers on inquiries asking us about, so how do I do security for my virtual machines and configurations within these virtual machines if I have 1,000 production web servers, right, in across these components, right? How do I make sure that all the configurations are identical? How do I make sure that I can detect and elevate any potential threats in this environment? And obviously, portability. So it's the same controls not working anywhere. So if you have a larger infrastructure as a service environment in a public cloud, some of the controls may work with one identity as a with one infrastructure as a service provider, but not with another, right? So you have to make sure that you're able to somehow centralize and think of these problems and solving these problems as well. So the next thing that you know, so this is basically the introduction, right, to our to the whole topic of cloud security. So I'd like to now move a step forward and really look at this thought leadership paper that Forrester collaborated with Microsoft on. So what we actually done, right, it's basically ran a survey. And this survey contained 22 questions, and we fielded it for 200 respondents. And the purpose of the survey was to get quantitative, solid, data-driven answers to the following questions. What are the application areas, IT services areas and application types areas where cloud security requires the largest growth, right, and where cloud security is actually growing the fastest? And secondly, what is different? What is most different about the on-premise and cloud security technically? So what are the various technical areas where things are most different? And where are things most different process-wise? So what are the processes that are different? So really, really interesting questions here. So what we've, you know, I'd like to share some demographics of respondents with you now. So basically, the first question that we ask is that we always do demographics, and this is how we also screen our participants. In which country is your organization headquartered? So you can tell that this is a fairly global survey. United States and EMEA represented fairly proportionately here. So it's really a pretty interesting and broad brush quantitative effort. Next, slide talks about the survey demographics, right? What is the industry of the respondent? And apparently we've had a fairly strong representation of manufacturing, financial services, consumer services, telecommunications, retail, healthcare, government, and some other smaller segments like transportation, education, and others. So it's a pretty interesting mix of respondents that really highlights that these problems are not just relevant, and these cloud security questions are not just relevant in the prime-time industries such as healthcare or financial services or the telco verticals, but they are really top of the mind for a lot of folks in other verticals. So this is not an industry or vertical-specific problem that we discovered here, but it basically applies to every single vertical who's using the cloud here. So the next question that we basically wanted to further stratify our respondents along is really basically what is the level of involvement of the respondents. So the question was, how involved are you with the organization's cloud strategy implementation management? And really, we were able to get a large, so that these responses came from those people who are either regularly involved at 57%, or it's really their primary job to plan, implement, and operate basically various cloud portfolios out there in the cloud. So that, again, it was a very interesting thing, because it's really this whole chart illustrates that these responses came from the folks who really are in the deep of working with cloud and are pushed for providing better cloud security. The next slide is really around some of our key findings. So basically, the first bullet, flexible models, scalability, and lower overall costs continue to drive cloud adoption. Again, I don't think it's anything surprising, but we wanted to basically be sure that these are one of the key drivers here. I'm going to talk about each one of these areas a little bit in more detail. 40% of the survey population have moved email to the cloud, and more workloads will follow. So we asked the question as to what are the services that people are moving to the cloud, and email was one of the top choices here. Data storage, email, and portals are the fastest cloud adoption areas, so these are the biggest growth areas. The next one, when evaluating cloud providers, IT professionals focus on network security, data protection, and continuity. So we asked them what are some of the biggest concerns for them when it comes to cloud security and network security, data protection, and continuity the biggest concern areas. And obviously, IT professionals expect some architectural and process changes in security as a result of cloud adoption. Again, this is something that comes up all the time. In my inquiries, we have this fairly standard type of inquiry where people ask me, so what are the best ways that we need to change our architecture? Can you show us some architectural blueprints, Forrester, that we can change infrastructure here so that we are able to promote and adopt cloud security best. So let's get into some of the detailed charts and let's try to interpret some of them as well. So basically, the question was around flexibility and lower cost. So what we asked them, the respondents, please select the top three drivers for using cloud-based solutions versus on-premises. And the first thing was basically more flexible cost models. In other words, being able to move from capital expenditures being spent on licenses, software licenses, and being able to scale up and down here. So obviously the second answer was ability to easily scale up services as needed. Lower cost, so again, the lower cost really means hardware, power, licensing, and really any kind of a fixed non-human costs. The next one requires fewer IT resources to set up and maintain. Interestingly, this was a response that came in pretty low in the answers to this question. We have seen that a lot of organizations are not laying off IT administrators when they move to the cloud from an on-prem installation, but basically they repurpose their IT resources and administrators to more value-add tasks. So instead of doing routine, laborious types of activities, such as patch management or upgrading environments, et cetera, using the cloud allows companies to restructure and move these personnel to higher value add activities such as threat management, creating models in tools, understanding emerging threats, further taking business requirements and adding more of those business requirements onto their roadmap and implementation later on. So less reactive and more proactive activities are definitely enabled by cloud adoption. The next results slide really talks about some of the fastest growing areas, right? So we asked the question, what is your adoption timeline on moving the below applications to the public cloud? And basically we've seen data storage, obviously being moved to the cloud again. It is an area where there's little to no value at keeping this in-house. Obviously, if the cloud provider can protect your data well, you can assume that a cloud provider will be able to provide better security and obviously much higher availability than most client organizations can. Email, obviously, mission critical infrastructure, again, in terms of communications, a lot of organizations are moving email, calendaring, and various types of personal productivity collaboration platforms into the cloud. Next one, customer, employee, and partner portals. Nobody really wants to hang on to operating their portal, and they're really looking at how they can move these portals to the cloud. And looking at identity management, you know, putting on my other hat of an identity management analyst, this is a huge, huge interest area, right? How do I move my customer, employee, and partner portals into the cloud, and how do I connect the access controls and identity management of these portals to my on-premise environment? This is always a huge question. Document management and word processing were also runners up in this question. The next question really talks about data and protection, but what I'd like to talk about first here is that a lot of organizations are under the false belief, which is pretty dangerous, that if they move data to the cloud, they are not going to be responsible for it. And it's definitely a wrong approach. So the Cloud Security Alliance and various other mandates dictate that when data is transferred to the cloud, the responsibility for protecting and securing the data typically, and in almost all cases that we've seen, remains with the collector or custodian of the data. In other words, you cannot so if basically data is lost and your cloud provider loses your data, you cannot shift the blame to your cloud provider that you're going to get from your clients, right? You have to be able to demonstrate and defend your strategies as to, you know, why, you know, how you protected your data, et cetera. So that is a very important thing. And if we looked at the another key finding of the survey, right, we asked the question, when evaluating cloud service providers' physical and virtual environments, how critical do you feel that the below technical capabilities, so technical is the key word, meet your security standards and regulatory requirements? We got invariably these answers. So firewalls, making sure that you have the network security components in place to keep the bad guys out, and making sure that you have secure and well thought through connections between your on-prem and your cloud assets or assets in public clouds. Next thing is data leak prevention. How do you make sure that you do not leak data from these cloud environments? And obviously, encryption of data in transit. So basically, data leak prevention and encryption of data in transit, this is obviously a very important aspect of how data needs to be protected across these environments. So anytime we have an inquiry with an IT end user that asks us about any kind of a SaaS service or infrastructure as a service, one of the key questions, right, that we hear here is how can that cloud provider protect our data? And interestingly, this will be one of the key criteria with the highest weight in our upcoming cloud security provider wave moving forward. So we're going to be doing a wave on how the public cloud providers can provide security services for specifically these areas. So it is this slide and these results actually have a huge impact on how people ask these questions and how they evaluate cloud providers out there. Next one is obviously disaster recovery and IT service continuity management, so BCDR types of activities, and finally intrusion detection and prevention systems. Again, being proactive in finding out how you need to respond to any threats out there. So the next question, right, that we asked was really about the differences, right? So in the hypothesis slide out, we asked the question, I put out this bullet there, you know, we wanted to find out where people feel that there are the biggest differences between on-premise security and cloud security. So here's what we found out. How different do you expect the management and implementation of security for the technology domains in terms of on-prem versus cloud environments? People said that disaster recovery and BCDR probably are going to be most different. And again, I would highly encourage everybody to dig into your cloud provider's BCDR backup practices, because if those are not stored, if the backups are not stored securely and there's some security holes there, that can have tremendous implications when it comes to security. Identity and access management and access control, no questions here. So basically, this is definitely an area where organizations can no longer maintain their monolithic access control strategies, right? So you have to have a way of your employees working with both on-premise workloads as well as cloud workloads, and also allow your business partners and customers to work with your on-prem solutions as well as with your cloud-based assets as well. Federation is just one way of doing this. We've seen a lot of other measures here as well, basically that underline this differences between identity management and access control. Physical security tools, making sure that the cloud provider is able to secure their environment is a huge question, and also administrator access to machines, right? That is also part of physical securities as well as identity management. Storage and workload isolation, nobody wants to actually have their competitor in the cloud environment peek at their data. Intrusion detection, security incident and event management, and privileged identity management tools, so passwords, safes, session recording, privilege delegation, huge problem areas when it comes to the cloud. So we are seeing a whole new generation of tools basically attending to each one of these problem areas. And finally, the last question is basically the question about the regulation. So when thinking about compliance audit, when evaluating cloud providers, how important is it that the vendor meet the following compliance standards and requirements and regulations? And basically, respondents said that not only they have to only work with vendors who can demonstrate that they satisfy compliance with these regulations and compliance mandates, but also when you have a customer, right, who may have a regulation mandate that you've never been implicated or never been falling under, the fact that you do business with that customer really causes that new mandate or new compliance requirement to cascade from your client to you and from you to your cloud provider. So it's basically a chain of these requirements, right? So if there is one originator of a compliance requirement in the chain, it's highly likely that it's basically going to be passed down through the chain. So ISO 27000 was clearly one of the top requirements when selecting cloud providers. SAS 70, so SSA 16, SOC 1 stuff was out there too. Obviously, there's some confusion between what SAS 70 and SOC 1 was, but again, people refer to this as SAS 70. So the second and the last item should be somewhat merged here. Then compliance with HIPAA, HITECH, HITRUST, etc. framework. So the whole the healthcare types of compliant mandates also played an important role here. SOX is not going away. We may have heard less about SOX recently, but it's clearly something that's here to stay. PCI DSS and then basically encryption or tokenization of sensitive payment data is also something that we get quite asked about. SOC 2 is something that a lot of people have been asking us about. We really do have a lot of inquiries on this, and I would highly encourage the audience to actually look at the Forrester Cloud Security Compliance Checklist, which is essentially a fairly comprehensive long list of things that you want to look at, which correlate to these mandates as well. And then you've got the federal things, FISMA, FedRAMP, or FIPS, types of U.S. government type of types of compliance mandates. So in summary, before I conclude my presentation here, it seems that the cloud brings with it a brand new types of security mandates that look at network, BCDR, identity and access management, data protection, and security and incident management, and event management, as well as intrusion detection. These components will be, to some degree, part of the offerings in this space. So any public cloud offering should have fairly good controls and documented controls around how they plan to mitigate security threats in these spaces at a minimum. So with that, I'd like to conclude my presentation and hand it over to Dave.
Thanks, Andreas. It's great. I'm just going to take a few minutes to actually highlight a couple of points, emphasize a couple of points that were made earlier, and then what I'd love if people want to start throwing some questions at us. I think that's the opportunity we can both make sure that we hit what's important to folks in the audience and that find that that's the way that we both learn from this, which is kind of a great thing for us. So as I said earlier, this notion of the CISO can't say no all the time. The thing I'll just share with some folks in the audience is the thing that's been kind of interesting for me over the last couple of years. Microsoft has this executive briefing center where we bring in customers from around the globe, and one of the things that's been quite striking for me over the last couple of years is a number of briefings where it has been the strategy, the business owners, the business decision makers who've been in, and they've not invited the IT folks. And so I think this notion of being able to get at the solution from a SaaSware and people just picking up marketing solutions from the CMO and such, there really is a pretty profound shift here. And I think if you're on both sides, we have to still have the right degrees of control to protect the business, but you know, we need to empower the business to do the things they need to do, and that's sort of illustrative of that. The other thing I'll highlight, Anders made the point around moving from patch management to threat management. So basically, this is not about replacing people, but getting them to do things that are perhaps more valuable to the business. Part of my history here in Microsoft is I've worked on SQL Server long ago, and we took the product from 120 control knobs down to 15 or so, and many of the DBAs of the day thought we were trying to put them out of work, and they were quite anxious about it. But as it turns out, they were all employed, except instead of waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning to allocate more memory to the server, they were helping people write better queries. Some of them got more into the BI side. So I think we'll see the same thing here, But it's important to be able to understand what you need to do to make that transition. And that's sort of the next point I want to make here. I find a lot of emotional response to the cloud, as in, I'll never move my data to the cloud. And sometimes I try to challenge that notion in a positive way. And another fact that Andre said on the slides was email moving quite quickly to the cloud. So as I was having this dialogue, say 3 to 4 years ago, I had briefings with a lot of C-level executives who would say, I'm not going to move any of my data to the cloud. And I would look at them and say, are you considering moving your email to the cloud? And many of them would say, of course I am. And I'd say, well, you don't have any interesting business data, proprietary value in your mail? And you can almost see the gears start to mesh. And so I think the thing that's important here is that there are trends and shifts with respect to having more access, more tunnels back into existing things, more devices carrying more data that are somewhat orthogonal from the cloud. And so it's really important that we understand sort of the larger trends. And if I abstract it, I think it's about something that's remained constant for a long, long time. We need to be able to provision and manage applications, users, and assets. And the assets can be physical assets like PCs or devices, and so, or assets such as information assets. And the means by which we protect them needs to evolve over time. So if you go way back to 30-plus years ago, when there wasn't really any remote access capabilities, the physical buildings that you went to work on were part of the access control. So if you were terminated as an employee, the reason you didn't get into the information systems the next day is because you didn't get into the building. But as soon as we had remote access, that was a challenge because people might have had passwords into multiple systems and they could log in. So these shifts have been occurring for decades, and the cloud is just sort of, you know, the next one along the way. So, and again, it's obviously about balancing value, risk, control, friction. And so I'll go on to the next slide. You know, what are we doing about it? There are an alphabet soup of compliance standards, which are very important. And I just made a great point that it is transitive in the sense that if anyone in the chain has one of these requirements, it means that the provider needs to be able to produce them. The point I want to make here in this first bullet is from the Azure perspective, this is an ever-changing list. So I think it's just been in the last couple of weeks that we've announced the PCI compliance, for example. And so there's a resource, the Azure Trust Center, and I have the URL in here that you can go refer to. Other things that we're doing, and this is kind of interesting, people may have a question or two about this, is that we obviously are, from a product standpoint, learning a tremendous amount from Azure, which is influencing all of our products. So the things that we are learning at public cloud scale across the globe are being brought back into private cloud or hosted cloud. So that learning from our public cloud is not going to be just available through Azure or Microsoft. It's going to find many of those learning, many of those product capabilities will find their way to private clouds that you may deploy, hosted clouds, others may deploy on our infrastructure, or even the server products. And you know, final point I'll make is the product changes. I talked about the resources that we needed to provision and manage, whether they're users or machines or what applications. Azure Active Directory is a way and is available now in Azure, a premium version, in preview, so you can do much of this, and we see many SaaS applications integrating. So if you have employees who have multiple SaaS applications, you want to have the same sort of single sign-on and access management capabilities that you've had in enterprise solutions for a long time. And Azure Active Directory, and the facts and figures are quite stunning. I mean, hundreds of billions of authentications going on in the system at scale around the globe. It's empowering Office 365 for quite some time and now available sort of as an Azure public service. New encryption capabilities. If people wanted to spend time, there's a lot of work going on here from key management all the way through homomorphic encryption capabilities, if you've heard of that. Basically, the idea there is you can encrypt data and still be able to do some degree of mathematical functions on it, which really helps in the context of queries in databases and such. Because if data is encrypted in a form that is just fully opaque, there's not much that we can do in the cloud from a querying standpoint and adding value in that form. So there's a class of what's known as homomorphic encryption, partial and full homomorphic encryption capabilities that we are looking at as well. And by fabric isolation, sort of the last point I have here on the second slide, this notion, you can think about it as role separation kind of plus-plus. It is, even if you're at a hosted location that you can't trust, we want capabilities in our computing fabric to say that administrators are not able to look at anything of yours, even memory within the guest, within your VM, for example. And so a lot of learning, a lot of evolution on the product side that is going to come through in some really interesting capabilities here in the next year or so. So with that, I'll close, and we'll just kind of hopefully people have some questions, and we can just go from there.
Yeah, that sounds good. Thank you. So I think why don't we go ahead and just first push out a quick two-question survey so we can gauge the audience's impressions and preferences around future topics. And we'll just go ahead and look at the questions and start getting into these in a minute or so. So first question here just came in. Moving to the cloud does not shift the ultimate responsibility for data protection to the cloud service provider, but the customer does take a dependency on that provider for things like physical and network security. How should customers think about the division of these duties?
Andres, is that something you want to take first, and then I'll... I'll take that one then. The way I think about it, I start from... I'm sorry. I think you might have been muted. So the way I think about it just abstractly is basically where are the trust boundaries and who are the actors involved? There's the cloud provider, there may be a hoster, the administrators on your side. You get people who are part of how the bits are traveling from one point to another. And there are a class of things that we're looking to do to say, how do we separate these? And encryption is sort of the primary mechanism to keep it out of the wrong hands, if you will. And it's a balance between control and empowerment. You want to be able to empower the right people to do the right things without, seeing, what they shouldn't see. And so end-to-end encryption, we've made a public statement in the last month or two. There's a blog posting from Brad Smith, our chief legal counsel, on our statement there. We'll be doing encryption between data centers, even inter-service with ours. Encryption at rest on everything. Things working on there. And then have a very high degree of control over administrator access. So one of our KPIs is how many people may have access, and we're moving everything to sort of a just-in-time for just enough access capability. So all of the administrators on our side only have access granted for a particular task, and it's all completely audited. And so there's a lot of work going on the controls and on sort of the end-to-end architecture to make that work.
I would agree with these statements, Anresh. So basically, we've seen a lot of thinking around, in the data protection space, how do you make sure that you have an environment where you got at least dual controls for any kind of data backup operations, right? Or any kind of crucial and very highly sensitive key management operations, right? A lot of times we're seeing people, companies wanting to hang on to their keys and basically keep control of their keys, even if they're using any kind of a cloud environment. And obviously, this kind of brings with itself a lot of technical questions, right? And we talked about, you know, homomorphic encryption and various other search mechanisms. But I think that's just the tip of the iceberg, and we're going to be seeing a lot of new product services and capabilities out here. I would also argue that identity and access management in and of itself is going to be a humongous question here, because separating basically the access methods for a business partner or for an employee population without any of the legacy VPN and network segmentation type of controls is always challenging. And I think it will also force organizations to rethink the entitlements control and application rights management, so types of questions within an application. So who can have access to what within an application, and basically blending in a new type of user into this equation of identity management. So in the past, we used to differentiate between in identity management between employees, between business partners, and customers, right? And now we have a brand new entity or brand new user type, which is basically a member of the cloud provider's workforce, right? I think that is not necessarily an administrative member, but if you have any kind of stack augmentation or any kind of administrative help at the cloud provider, you know, how can those people at the cloud provider access your workload, and what are the identity management implications of that? That is a huge, huge question here. So, like I said, this is going to be a fairly broad reaching set of questions. And really, policy definition, that's another huge question. And we've been seeing a lot of movement towards basically a lot more compartmentalization and a lot more administrative control and version control over how policies are being created, changed, deleted, disabled. When it comes to the security configuration of a cloud environment, you know, how that happens, and really centralization of security policies, configuration management. I think that these will be all part of this separation of duties, you know, when it comes to cloud security.
Great, thank you. So next question, identity and access management is important in the cloud. We are in a multi-devices world. Where do these two concepts collide? How should organizations think about securing access to a world of SaaS apps from a world of devices?
Either one of us can go first. I've been spending a bunch of time on that. I think about it over the last few months. I mean, we spent a tremendous amount of time, and the thing for me, which is the kind of breakthrough, was to say, okay, let's just step back and abstract this, and I mentioned it earlier. It's really about provisioning and managing applications, users, and assets and such, and that hasn't changed at that level. It's just that the applications have changed. They're no longer, you know, within a single enterprise, you know, solution. They're SaaS applications. The physical assets are no longer just a domain-joined PC in the Microsoft case or whatnot, but are devices from a variety of folks. And so what is interesting here, and I think I'll let Andres comment on, what is playing out in the market in terms of mobile device management and how that's evolving. And I think there are a bunch of somewhat piecemeal, if you will, approaches that are kind of solving or attempting to solve the biggest pain point at any point in time. And I think the real solution, it's interesting to think from my role as a CTO, what's the world going to look like in 5 years? And what's the right solution for that world? And so I think that, you know, it is basically a modern analogy to what does it mean to provision and manage apps, users, and assets in this new world. And I'll go back to the, you know, thing that we would have in the mix there is the Azure Active Directory. So if I am doing single sign-on through that, and, you know, one scenario is I terminate an employee, I don't want him to have access to the SaaS apps at that point. And so many of the existing mechanisms, if they are faithfully sort of reborn in the cloud, that's not about taking existing things and hosting them, can continue to be solutions in this new world. But it's going to be somewhat of a mess just because there are more players. It's more complicated now than it was in the past. So that's sort of my opening.
Agreed. There's more complication, right? So we've been seeing a movement of the user store from a pure on-premise environment to the split between an on-premise and a cloud environment or a cloud portal. So basically, when you're looking at the cloud adoption, SaaS or IaaS adoption, we've seen an increasing number of single sign-on portals, right? Microsoft has one, and as do other cloud providers. So single sign-on and user ID provisioning to SaaS-based application create a new industry, cloud IaaS services, on which we have a Forrester Wave. So that's one thing. And really, the whole area of using SAML and various other federated access protocols is really, and OAuth is a really good way of solving these distributed authentication problems to multiple types of hosting models for multiple classes of users, right? And the device or the endpoint aspect comes into this play that you really have to have, you know, support for native mobile applications, which are not necessarily web-based at all. They don't use web protocols. So using single sign-on from and between mobile applications is definitely something that's a brand new requirement. So because of this, API-based identity management services have found a huge trajectory of growth where people are increasingly realizing that externalizing a lot of identity management functions, access control, authentication, authorization, validation, provisioning, deprovisioning, even attestation kinds of decisions in the format of an API will be indispensable moving forward when all this will be in earnest enabled for mobile devices, right? So mobility has a huge implication in access control, and also mobility has a huge implication in terms of provisioning, user ID provisioning. So an attribute, right, that was not necessarily a huge consideration point in the past was, so what are the types of devices that, you know, Andrash as a user has, right? You know, in the past it was, you know, he had his corporate desktop or laptop. But moving forward, provisioning needs to take into account the plethora and a variety of mobile devices that a user might have, and the impact of these various types of devices on what are the provisioned assets that the user might get. So if I have an Android device, I'm going to have an Android application pushed to my mobile device. If I have an iOS device, I might have that pushed to my device. And so there's a lot of implications in terms of user identity provisioning that are coming from the device variety that we have out there. And I think the Internet of Things will even further complicate this puzzle here.
Great. So I think the next question, we have kind of a class of questions that are more or less asking who has access to data in the cloud. So if either of you would like to kind of speak to that?
Yeah, I can speak to from the Azure perspective first, and then we'll I think there, I don't know if everyone can see every question, but there are things about, there's an unscrupulous cloud vendor, can they make copies of my stuff? Can cloud administrators see my stuff? Who can see my data? And I think of this in a number of forms. I mean, there's very much an element of trust here and brand trust, right? And so we start from that in that, I was working on the cloud database product some time ago, and I realized that we were in a new space where, frankly, if we had forms of data loss or leakage, it could damage the business in a way that it could not damage any on-premises business when we were just putting something on a DVD and most of the challenge was someone else. So we take this very, very seriously, and that's sort of where we start from. So our promise is that nobody has access to your data unless we need it, and we'll ask you in the course of debugging and whatnot. That's we take telemetry from systems, but not user data. It's sort of, you know, what's happening on them. In those cases where some things are part of sort of the physical structure, database names. We consider that PII, personally identifiable information, and our telemetry systems scrub that out. And so very much it is a something that we take really seriously. And I think the next layer to put on top of that is, what are the controls in place? And I spoke earlier around, I think the evolution of the controls will evolve towards more architected solutions where things are encrypted and we may get an entitlement from a customer for a bounded amount of time for a particular purpose. That's kind of the world we want to go to. And the trick, I think, to making this all work is transparency. If we get to this world in which everything is fully encrypted and we have fine-grained and bounded, time-bounded entitlements, you will know that we had access to a particular thing because the only way we could get it is by asking you for that entitlement and you providing it. As it stands right now, there are other controls in place where if we have to help debug something, we're only going to do it through our support organization only after they've asked and gained your consent. It's very much, and I think the thing you should think about this in the context of Microsoft is that our business model is not around trying to learn as much as we can about you to, you know, do a class of things in Azure. It's about being a trusted provider for your business needs. And so our policies and our controls are all structured in that fashion.
Dave, so I think we're just closing in on 10 o'clock. So I just want to thank everyone again for joining in today. We had a few questions on availability of slides and other resources, so I just wanted to let you all know that we'll be sending along a recording of the webinar, the slides, and also the white paper that Andres had referred to shortly. So thanks again, and hope you can join us for some future discussions.
Thank you.